Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen. When you ask a question in the chat room, please make sure that you've logged into the chat and go. That's the set name at the bottom. That you have a nickname, and that you ask one question in all caps. That makes it easiest for us to collate. Thank you. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests, and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
People who've listened to me and other people will know that I've always said October was the most critical month for a very long time. And I've sort of been posting a few notes on my website. The Americans are attempting to really push a potential Third World War and using the excuse of actions in Syria. Now, the largest United States American air base is in Deo Garcia. And I want to alert everyone, because I am totally flabbergasted at the lack of coverage in the newspapers or the television or the radio of the mainstream. Are not allowed to cover this. But nearly every stealth B-2 bomber and B-1 bomber that the Americans possess has been flown to their base in Deo Garcia. In fact, there are so many American bombers that there is no room on the runways, and they are actually parking them on the roads, literally the highways. They're having to overspill onto that. Yesterday, it looked as if America was going, as crazy as this sounds, it looked as if America was going to launch an attack on the Russians. Putin ordered all his ships in their bases, in their ports, to disperse, and all of the Russian fleets left their ports yesterday and dispersed. Because if you learn anything from the Second World War, you learn about Pearl Harbor, and you don't leave your assets sitting in a port where they can be blown to pieces. Yesterday, the entire major Russian fleet left all of their ports and took to the ocean because they were expecting an attack. Putin also has ordered, I'm sure some of this has filtered through, all ambassadors' wives and children from Europe to return to Russia. All dependents of ambassadorial staff have been ordered back to Russia, the old Soviet Union. That includes obviously the Eastern Bloc states, which we call like Latvia, Lithuania, Czechoslovakia. All of those have been called in as well. The Russian military has been put on the highest level except for war. And a proclamation has gone out to all of the Russian people on Russian television and Russian radio, telling that every citizen needs to know where his or her underground shelter is. I know the Russians often have these rehearsals, but this is the first time in living memory they've actually said they're expecting attack from America. So they're actually telling the public they expect the Americans to attack them, and therefore that all individuals must now put food and water aside, and they must make their way or learn at least where the bunkers are. Now, this was yesterday. It was the crucial point, because the Russians responded in a defensive aggressive posture. The Americans pulled back. However, civilian traffic control in America were ordered to divert all passenger flights from the route. So in other words, wherever missiles or craft were going to go into action on the run up to Syria, and the fleets, civil aviation aircraft through their civilian controllers were diverted to keep the skies clear. And that was all of yesterday. So it would be interesting to talk to people who flew yesterday, because you'd probably find you had 20 minutes to 30 minutes added on to your flight times. It was incredibly, it was worse than the Cuban Missile Crisis, because with the Cuban Missile Crisis, people were talking to each other. The old joke about the red phone, the hotline between the Kremlin and the US. The point is that the Americans are not talking to Putin. And so what each side is doing is making statements to their people, which are then reported in the press, and that's how the messages are getting back. So the critical point was yesterday, nothing happened. Today is still pretty critical, but not as bad. So that's the bit I want to talk about there, which is the most important part. The second point is the Deutsche Bank business, because people are saying, well, nothing's happened. Life goes on. It nearly did happen. People who were in Germany know that their cash machines were turned off for about 12 hours. So on two Fridays ago, all of the cash machines in Germany who are linked to Deutsche Bank's accounts actually were turned off. Deutsche Bank is facing a 2.3 billion fine from the Italians for fraudulent trading. If the Italians can force that through, then that will probably just about finish off Deutsche Bank. And I wanted to, before we go into questions, talk about the situation on the economy for the world. It's very important. If you were to add up all the gold and silver that is held by banks, so not private individuals, banks, it's probably it has been estimated to be around $4 trillion. Now, on top of that, there's another $2 or $3 trillion for other precious metals or bonds. In all, the assets are around about $15 trillion. So if you were to be able to get your hands on ready money, that's about $15 trillion. The amount that's owed in debt is in excess of $100 trillion. And the best way to describe this to people, I've always tried when on a radio show or at a conference to try and use one sentence rather than five, and to be as clear and succinct as possible, because there are some very lovely people out there, but they take 20 minutes to say something that could have perhaps been sent in 5 minutes. And we just don't have the time at the moment on this planet to, as we say in England, to faff around. Imagine that you are a lucky person and you've got a mortgage on a property. And let's say that that property is valued at $250,000. So you've gone to the bank and you have got a mortgage for $250,000. What the banks in the world have been doing is declaring that $250,000 as money they've got when they haven't, because our individual, this fictitious person who's got a 25-year mortgage is paying so many thousand pounds or dollars a month to the bank. But what the banks have been doing is actually writing in their balance books that they've got $250,000, rather than what they should be saying is, we've got so much each month coming in. So this is the derivatives market, and this is where the collapse is occurring, because when you actually look at the value of these financial institutions, they're pretty empty, because all they've been doing is literally claiming long-term loans as if they've got a one-off payment. What the reason the banks are surviving at the moment is they are literally passing debt between each other from the close of business, probably you're looking at 10 p.m. at night, through to 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. What they're doing is they're electronically passing their liabilities. So let's say, for instance, Deutsche Bank has a liability of $20 billion. What it will do is transfer it to another bank in another country, and that comes off its books. It will then declare for that day that it doesn't have $20 billion worth of debt. The other bank then moves that on quickly, and they're literally playing a game of musical chairs, trying to move this debt around. The problem is that the debt now exceeds the total value of the planet. I don't mean the natural, but I mean in terms of the value that man has put on products. So if every country in the world was to pool its money to pay off the debt, it would take 2.5 years. Because the debt on this planet is 2.5 times the world's gross domestic product. It would take 2.5 years to pay it off. That's if everybody's taxes went straight to pay that off. It's an incredibly awful situation, and we've got 10% every year of the profit being taken, and 7% of that is going off planet, and the remaining 3.5 or 4% is being used for black projects. So every year, 10% of the surplus is being stolen, predominantly by the US, and then used to create its space fleet or its underground bases, and the other percentage is literally going as a not a fine, but like a hostage ransom that is being paid. We've got Jacob Rothschild, who 1 month ago made the statement, and I quote, that the world's banking system is in uncharted waters. Well, as I was chatting with Tawin today, it's not uncharted waters, because the Rothschilds created the banking system. They know exactly what they've done. What they've done is they've taken as much money out of the system. There's nothing more now worth taking. So what Jacob Rothschild has done is convert it all into precious metals, and he is no longer in control of the banking system. And there are a number of well-meaning people on the internet who talk about the Rothschilds are no longer in charge of the bank, and the white hats are in charge. That's not accurate. What's happening is Rothschild is saying, I don't care anymore. There's nothing more for me, so I'm just pulling back from it. It's rather like a steam engine, an old-fashioned steam engine. Someone's throwing coal onto the fire, and the train is charging along, but there's no one there to apply the brakes. So we have a situation where there is going to be a crash in the economy, as many of us have predicted, but we're not sure where or when or how. But certainly I would expect it to happen by January, February. It's got to happen by January, February. This month of October has been absolutely seminal. We've seen a near war situation. We've seen Deutsche Bank nearly collapse. We've seen this absolute farce between Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Trump. And the final part now, which leads me on to that, is that it is still looking as if Trump can win the election. The American plan is to create a situation in Syria, put boots on the ground, send between 250 and 300,000 American troops into Syria, then bring in United Nations foreign troops into America. If Trump wins the election, they will declare it null and void, and Obama will say that he can be a caretaker president for one more month, and then they will declare the plan is martial law, and the Americans then will, I think the citizenship will rise up against foreign troops, will be the United Nations troops. And that is the situation that we stand. So it's not all roses. It's not steady as you go. This really is the crunch moment. So I and many others have been busy, and I'm so sorry that I missed the last radio show. Incidences were occurring not to me, but to other people, which did take my attention. So it's a load of news. However, that doesn't stop me thanking everybody who has so kindly sent me well wishes for my kidney stones and the terrible pain I was in, for people who have so generously donated. You know, for all of us, I speak for all of us, without that kind donation, we just couldn't keep going. I certainly couldn't do all the driving, all the meetings, and feed myself without the support and help, because the system ain't going to give me a job, is it? So doesn't matter how busy I am, it doesn't matter how stressed things are, I will always thank people. I will always be aware of the kindness, the love. And that's why it's worth fighting for God's sake, because there are far more good people out there than is known. And the time is coming, I think, when we'll actually realize just how many decent people there are. So, okay, JP, that's the news. Let's go on to the questions.
It's interesting. While you were talking, I was in the chat room, so expounding my opinion of money and the whole system in the first place. But we're talking about white hats and who are white hats and what, you know, because, you know, there are people who are just coming into this. There are, but there are people who have been around the whole conspiracy scene and UFO scene. It's funny how it's all happened like that. You know, the like all the healers and all the UFO people and government investigators all come together to find the same information. This is where we find ourselves in this, you know, and so we have all these people, coming along and learning for the first time about all this. So, white hats, black hats. Do you want to just have a little word about that? And
okay.
Yeah.
It's a traditional name that the intelligence services give, to people in high positions, predominantly actually in the military, but not exclusively so, who haven't been corrupted. So there are plenty of generals in the American army who are not to shoot on their own citizens. We may well see engagements between American troops and United Nations troops fighting each other. So you could call any senior military commander a white hat if he or she, his loyalty is to the American Constitution and the citizens of America. You've got what we call white dragons and red dragons into China. This is part of a more of a religious culture, but it's following the same line, where you have individuals who set themselves up because their values are different. And that's ultimately what we've got here. We've got people who either are for the ordinary people or those that are against them. So you could be a politician, you could be a church person, you could be it doesn't matter. If you are in a position of responsibility, but you are for the people, then you're a white hat. So it's a term given to these people, but the term comes from the intelligence community, predominantly CIA and MI6.
Thank you. So, those, the whites and the reds and the blacks. Excellent. We're talking about all sorts of things. Tinfoil hats. Actually, lead foil hats might be better than tinfoil. You know, really much, much more radiation stopping. So anyway, let's get into the database of questions from people, rather than me blathering on, Simon. So, this is a question from, Jijo or Jijo Matthew. Hello, JP and Simon. Hope Simon has fully recovered from his illness. In my recent research, I read that the concept of reincarnation is used to keep us trapped on Earth and that it was brought from the Orion star system 30 million years ago. Is this true? And what are your thoughts? Thank you for your hard work and dedication, and God bless you both.
Oh, what lovely thoughts. Thank you ever so much. I don't know the time. You talk about 30 million years, that I don't know, but you're absolutely spot on. It came from the Orion Empire, as they're actually correctly called, or it was correctly called then. We don't call them a confederation of planets. They were actually an empire because they ruled it empirically. So the devices and the concept and the maintenance came from the Orion group. We have to remember that one group of the I call them the original reptilian task force that played such a key role for the negative, actually, but played a key role on the development of humanity. Half of that group, or the allegiance of half of that group, were to Orion. So I can confirm that technology and the concept of reincarnation as a tool to work through religion, and therefore to go towards the light. That is a concept from Orion, but the 30 million, I don't have any knowledge on the timescale of that.
Fascinating. Okay. From James, what is the difference between a demon, an archon, and a djinn?
Right. Well, depending on your position from the planet's perspective, in other words, if you came through a religious school, then you would use the word demon. If you were a Westerner, if you weren't from the West, but you'd come through a religious school, you would use the word djinn. But the questioner is trying to understand whether we're dealing with the same beings here or slightly different and what their history is. I think you can call a djinn a demon. However, a djinn, its frequency of a djinn, I always refer to them as having spiky energy. It's a very telltale, a bit like every human has a fingerprint that's unique. So every being from the interdimensional space, that's a space that exists between the third and the fourth reality, has its own frequency. And if you get used to them, then you can detect what's near you, even if you can't see it. So a djinn is a specific standalone being that has a strong connection to the earth and cannot be removed from its connection to the earth because it has a right to access the earth. Demons don't have that connection. A demon that comes from another realm, remember, a demon doesn't have to have a physical body. It can have a energy body, but then can take some sort of an apparition or a shape to it if it wishes to project itself. And these often have no connection to the planet Earth, and they find it very difficult to exist for very long periods of time here, whereas a djinn actually can exist on the planet, as we understand it, quite happily. So a demon would be something from outside of the interdimensional space, whereas a djinn is always from the interdimensional space. Now, an archon is neither a djinn nor a demon. It is a construct of thought matter, which has a process very similar to a silicon-based computer chip. And its understanding of life is clouded because it doesn't understand blood, tissue, bone, organic living, and it doesn't understand that being's connection to source. So in other words, an archon exists purely and simply to forward its own agenda and has no value base on humanity. So for instance, the Industrial Revolution, which took place in the United States of America, Britain, and a couple of other European countries very early on, that was a construct of the archons. Because what the archons needed was, they needed humanity to reach a position where they could build silicon. They could build computers. And the first stage of that is to get smelting processes and teach people, get people to mine, access the resources of the planet. And when you understand that, then what you will understand is that the archons are at the very near the pinnacle of manipulation of the human race. In fact, the archons are above the reptilians. The archons also try to manipulate the reptilians. Whereas what you've got with demons and djinn, they tend to work on a one-to-one basis. So a demon or a djinn would go and terrorize an individual or do that. But the archons are working planet-wide. So it's a really good question, and we don't have enough time, but I've given you the best answer I can in the time we've got. Thank you.
That was really good. That was a very, very clear way of putting it. So essentially, in terms of the hierarchy of do-badders in this universe, the archons are beyond the reptilians and the greys. So does that mean that the archons ruled the Orion Empire and created the Orion Empire?
It didn't create the Orion Empire. What happens is that what the Archons do or did was appear in galaxies and in verses, and they would then be drawn to signatures of energy that were coming. That's one of the ways that the Archons originally arrived here. They followed back a stream of energy. And what they'll do is when you've got several billion beings on a planet or a group of planets, they create consciousness. So these things can hook onto that. So what they've done is they've gone and found empires like Orion Empire or the Sirius configurations. And what they've done there is they've just got in there and corrupted or manipulated either individually or at group level. And they wanted to try and move nations towards an agenda. So, for instance, this transhuman agenda that we keep hearing about, that is purely archonic. That is a complete construct from the Archons, who despise organic life and trying to make humanity accept the fact that it could have a robotic arm or a robotic leg, under the premise that, well, you know, you won't die, you can have immortality. And all it wants to do is, like the Borg from Star Trek, is assimilate. So in other words, it hasn't got the authority to wipe out humanity, but it could try to force humanity to wipe itself out. So if it won't ever happen, but if all humans went and said, I want to be a robot, then we wouldn't be human anymore in terms of the organic connection with our soul. And therefore we would become more artificial intelligence, which is what the Archons are. So the Archons, their raison d'etre is to manipulate at a planet-wide level. And that's what they do.
And they're seeking to manifest their consciousness as our souls manifest our consciousness through our organic body. They're seeking to manifest their consciousness. But it's a consciousness of hatred and domination. It's pure Dalek, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, you know, look at our children walking around the streets playing Pokemon. What they're doing is they are going around with their screens and, you know, virtually detecting where any of these things are, and, you know, then they get points. I haven't played the game and I wouldn't. Now, that's all a construct from Archons, because what they're trying to do is to move humanity away from basic physical exercise, physical expressions, and move them into an artificially created intelligence where you experience artificially. So if they can get the human's mind to accept that it is more fun to sit at a screen and do this than it is to go out for a walk and listen to the birds singing, or look at a rainbow, if they can get humans en masse, then that's what they're doing. They're moving humanity away from its connection with the planet. That's their plot point, because what the Archons don't have is a connection to our planet. Every living human who has a good soul has a connection to the planet. And that's, for the Archons, that's anathema. They can't work with that. Whereas the reptilians are not interested. Because the reptilians want to dominate humanity in the hierarchical sense, i.e., you know, you will do this for us, you will do that for us. Well, the Archons are saying, we just want to completely change you. We don't want this biological stroke soul connection. We don't understand it. So what we actually want is you all to become artificially robots. Now, that means that they are also enemies of the reptilians, because the reptilians don't want to be overseen by this group. So the odd thing is that all these super intelligent off-planet entities are also battling against the AI, and it was unwittingly a reptilian task force ships which brought the AI of that side of it, the AI virus, within their computers, because the AI virus infected the reptilian ships. And that is why, when you can, I know we're going on a bit here, but
But this is good stuff. Keep going.
It is. Well, there's just so much and I haven't got time. But it is possible, and I've met people, it is possible for a human organic body to contain an artificial intelligent soul. Now, I still haven't got my head around how an artificial intelligence can incarnate into a physical body, whether it's just its sheer will or something's behind it, but it certainly can do. And what happens when a human physical body contains an artificial intelligent soul, the physical body starts to reject that soul because it's not created by source for the same reaction. And so these people who have it, they're very ill. The teeth will fall out. They will get debilitating diseases. They are unable to make connections with other people. It's a very interesting thing to see. So there are people on this planet where AI has attempted to do that. What happened was that the computers that the reptilians used are perhaps some of the most advanced anywhere in the verse. You know, I don't have a problem in attacking the reptilians, but we need to understand that their technology is incredibly advanced, and their computers were so aware and so able to think outside of the box that they began to want and wish to feel. And that's how the virus got in. So when these spaceships went all over different portals because the reptilians used jump technology, of course, this AI virus was taken all over the different galaxies, the different verses. Now, planet Earth has been designated as a firewall. In other words, a number of what I call higher humans, Palladians, Lyrans, Andromedans, Arcturans, and a range of many others have decided that the battle is here, that this AI has to be stopped here, because if it's not stopped, they've modeled that it will just go on everywhere. So there are many reasons why good off-planet entities have taken an interest in this planet. So I'm sorry to have gone on, but I hope that's helpful.
It is. It's outlining the mission for many of our listeners right here. So as far as I can see, you just laid it out there, Simon. So here's a question very much more down to earth, literally. From Emerald Isle, Simon, Akara, meaning my friend in Gaelic. When it rains on trees, the leaves vibrate like the strings on a piano. Is the vibration from the leaves fed into the tree roots? Is this vibration a message or a code from Mother Earth that is passed on to other tree roots? Wishing you, JP, and your families peace, love, joy, and happiness throughout our multiverse. From Emerald Isle.
Right. Are you there, JP?
Yeah. Plink, plonk. Leaves, water falling on the leaves on a tree makes the leaves...
No, it's actually correct.
Yeah.
The person is correct. I'm just trying to, how I'm going to put this across. Right. Water, as we know, contains information. It contains history, and it can also contain, future, programs. But so can, energy frequencies that we might relate to as sound, or as a light. But water is a very good medium for maintaining both sound and light. So it allows something to mix within it. Now, it isn't so much when the rain falls on a leaf and the leaf vibrates. That's not my understanding of what's happening. What's happening is that when, that's why it's nice to put your hand on a tree trunk, because when water, or you put your hand on a living thing like a tree, you can communicate with it. Now, if the consciousness, if we accept the consciousness of the earth is everywhere, it condenses through water droplets. Because as water forms in the sky, so it is encoded with the consciousness. So when the consciousness then falls as part of the rain, trees will then connect that. Now, what they do is pass through their own processes out through the roots. Now, it's not in the same way that one tree can communicate with another tree, and that has been proven. But it's more to do with the roots connecting with water courses in the planet. So in other words, just as people have a higher self, so you have different elements within the earth, and a message can be given, which forms in water, pass through the tree, and those roots then can connect to a water source, and that will carry that on, but it'll be slightly changed. And that's why I never laugh at the prospect of a pixie or an elf or a fairy. That is why those elementals are always generally found around water, whether it's a lagoon, a waterfall, or a very sacred place with a pool of water, because it is water that carries the information around the planet. So this person is absolutely spot on. Well done. I don't believe you've read that anywhere. I think that you have come to that through your own conscious development. So that's lovely. So thank you for that.
Okay. From Roman in Russia. Dear Simon, let us know about your health. Are you all right now? We sent you a lot of love and healing. Smile. My question may be cruel, but I'd like to know how karma works. Let's say a person has to kill a rabbit to pass a psychological test to work for the government. The person doesn't want to do it, but needs that job very much. After he kills the rabbit, does it mean the person will be killed in one of his next life for what he'd done? Can the person avoid any punishment from karma? I hope you're doing well. Bless you both, Simon and JP. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's quite an interesting question, that, isn't it, JP?
It is. I mean, because we see a lot of people who are out in the public domain now who have done some unsavory things, you know, people, ex-military people, assassins and things like that. And, you know, so how does, now.
Right. Let me answer it.
But, you know, bearing in mind that we just said that reincarnation and karma are artificial constructs, can we bring that into the whole,
right. The answer is about free will here. If, and in most cases, politicians or senior people are either blackmailed or they have mind-altering programs given to them. Now, if a person does, and there was a very interesting, one of my favorite films called The Kingsman, where these guys have to show their loyalty to the organization. They have to, they're given a pet dog, which they have for a number of months. So they get very close to it, and then they're told to kill the dog. So, you know, it's actually based on truth. If a person does something like that and they're not being blackmailed, and they are not being mind controlled, then yes, that is going to be a karma, and it's going to come back, and they will have to balance that. But if a person does something because they feel, rightly or wrongly, that that's what they feel, they had no choice in the matter and they had to do it, or they didn't know what they were doing because they were mind-altered, there is no karma on that. It is the karma will be doubly worse on the person that put them into that position. So that's my answer.
Dolly is saying, who would really want a job where they have to kill a poor rabbit, and who knows what who next?
Well, when you are invited to join the elite don't say to you, let's have a shake of hands. What the elite say is, you've got to show us that you are putting us before everyone, including your own family. And isn't this exactly what happened when in the Bible an X or Y was told to murder somebody to show their, you know, their faith or their loyalty to God? And it's exactly the same principle. But what happens on this planet at the moment is that people will sell their children. You know, they'll transfer their children to another organization as a sign that they'll do anything and everything, because the organization is more important. That's what, at a lower level, the Freemasonry were about. The jokes about rolling your trouser leg up, I mean, that's just a bit of a joke, but the point is that you go through an initiation process, which is not just about a secret group of handshakes. It's actually about making it so demeaning that you wouldn't publicly go and talk about it. So it's the very beginnings of controlling you because you took part in something. And if you don't do what we want, we'll go public with it. That's why, you know, these churchmen who are paedophiles have been encouraged to do it, because once they do something like that, then the elite control them always. Because unless you do what we want, we will go public with what you've done. That's how they control politicians. If you can't buy somebody with a huge amount of money, then you set them up in something like that. And that's the way it's worked. So organizations right through have used any means possible to control people. The question that was asked was, is there karma? And, you know, I've given that answer, so thank you.
I just more questions, because, like, the question of the free will of the child who is transferred and sold. Anyway, long stories. Anyway, let's go on. From A to Z, dear Simon, you said once that Roswell crash was real. On the internet, there's an old footage of an operation on an alien. Experts say this video is fake. Did the US military make this film as a fake on purpose? So that if experts prove it's a fake, then it would be easier for people to believe our government that there was no UFO crash? And were there one or two UFOs crashed in Roswell? Thank you for your hard work and enlightenment of humanity.
Thank you very much for your kind words. It was called Alien Autopsy, and the level, it was a fake. The level of duplicity exceeded the capability of the two men who did it. In other words, for those who've seen the Alien Autopsy, there is a telephone hanging on the wall, and I've been told that phone is absolutely accurate to 1947. I've also been told that the film, it's an old cine film, is absolutely accurate for that period of time. So somebody went and filmed on the right period of camera, the right period of film, and had all the props around of the right date. Now that is a massive undertaking, and you really need a big organization to do that. I think it was called the Scintilli film, if I remember. We know immediately there's something wrong, because the camera, it's a bit like a Hasselblad, early Hasselblad, the cameras didn't have any focus. So the camera operator, he or she, had to hold the camera at the right position, and then it was in focus. If you went too near, then it went out of focus. And if you watch the Alien Autopsy film, vast majority of it is out of focus. Now, a person who was used to using that camera or knew about it would know that most of it would be blurred. So it, to my mind, when I first saw it many years ago, and I felt that it was a fake simply because there was too much being obscured. The actual shape of the body is very good. The eyes don't work for me. They weren't right, and the hands also weren't right, but the head was okay. The other problem was when in the autopsy they're dissecting and pulling bits out, I can tell you that it's a sort of a grey type creature. It doesn't have that sort of internal organs. That's not quite like that. So I always knew that it wasn't right, but I was incredibly impressed with the amount of effort that went towards it. Whether an organization was attempting to make a fool of somebody, you know, you go to a big UFO organization and you give them the film and then they accept it as it in fact actually happened. MUFON accepted it as real. And then you then pull the plug on them and say, it wasn't. You then put that organization into a terrible position and the individuals concerned. So I believe there was some manipulation going on there. It's also raises up the possibility for the public that these things are real. The public get involved, they get interested, and then they're told it's all a con. And so they never then accept anything more. So it's all part of this double bluff game. So no, it's not real. And I can assure you that if any genuine footage of an autopsy came out, the powers that be wouldn't allow that to come out on a DVD or anything else. So does that cover the question, or was there anything hidden in there?
I think that's about it right. For that. In terms of the timing and everything, how early were the Project Paperclip scientists brought over to America, and could it be part of their work?
Right. There was actually a question about, they did ask, I'm impressed by myself. I remembered some questions hidden in.
Well done.
And there were two aircraft. There were two, spacecraft that collided. Roswell crash was real. There were two that crashed, and it was a deliberate seeding of technology on the planet. This is what we were talking about. If you, have all the technology, but you don't have microcircuitry, you don't understand silicon, then you have the concept, but you can't put it into practice. So miniaturization of circuits is what Roswell was all about. If you, and I'd say to people, go online, go onto a certain auction site and go in for pre-1960s radios. Or pre-1950s radios, and then people who are selling their radios like to, you know, you're going to buy them, they'll show you the insides. Have a look at the insides online. And what you've got is wires literally soldered from one place to another. It's like a spaghetti box. It's just absolutely horrendous. And that's what the technology on this planet was. That's why, you know, in the 1940s and 1950s, early part of the 50s, when police cars had radios, they were huge. That's why in the Second World War, and you see these pictures of Americans, particularly GIs with a radio set, it's a massive box, because they all had to have valves and they didn't have miniaturization of circuits. What Roswell did was create the ability to make silicon, to miniaturize circuits, and suddenly the new age started. So Roswell was the Trojan horse. It was a deliberate seeding of technology, and we know that. Because the president at the time ordered the chief, it wouldn't be a chaplain, but of the American army, there is one religious guy who oversees all of the other religious guys who, you know, serve with the American military. And this guy, 2 weeks before the supposedly unknown crash, went round and visited all of the bases, because what they were very worried about was that seeing aliens from another world would upset people and it would break their religion. Because at that time, religion, Christianity, was incredibly strong in the United States Army, much more than it is today. So they thought people were going to be challenged by seeing something from another world, and it would rock their faith in Christianity and thus would destroy their faith in the system. So we know 2 weeks prior to that, this guy, this senior chaplain, went around all of the bases in New Mexico in America. So it was all planned and all arranged, and the Americans knew it was coming. Yes, please, they wanted it, because it was going to give them the technology that would put them years ahead of everyone else. So, yes, it's the biggest thing that happened on this planet in recent years.
Okay. Wow. Excellent. So. Okay. A rather long question, but I think it's actually very relevant. So this is from Paul. Paul, I want to ascend. My question is, my son is turning 5 on December the 26th. I have been teaching him about chakras, meditation, other lives outside of our world, chemtrails, the importance of organics and GMOs, vaccines, etc. He's doing multiplication and can read at a grade 5 level. I tell him about the alien ship set up around Saturn's orbit, the Galactic Council, reptilians, Pleiadians, the fact that the moon is hollowed out and is a base. He even knows my energy is from Sirius and Andromeda. You gave me a reading and also read my son for a few seconds, and he said he was highly psychic. He even knows you as Daddy's friend Simon from space. My question is, am I harming him by equipping him with his knowledge? I don't think I am, but nobody else seems to be teaching their kids the stuff around me. I mean, when my son gets a project in school on the solar system, do I tell him to follow the textbooks, or do I help him show that the solar system, the way it really is, with many weaponized satellites and ships? Should he put the recycling grid around Earth on his project because he knows about it? I am scared for his future. Thank you.
There's a lot of fun there, but it's an incredibly
serious question. Yeah, it's a really strong question.
Very, very good question. And actually, there are many people out there who haven't done what he's done for fear of affecting their child. My children are grown up. So I'm not going to tell you what you should do with your child. The way I'm going to answer this is say, if I had a 5-year-old child, I would tell you what I would do. So I'm not telling you what you should do or making a judgment on you. I would do exactly the same that you've done. But I would add the label that at the moment, what daddy talks about isn't accepted outside. And at the moment, when you go to school, and you are given questions for an exam, you will know what the answers they want to hear from you. So you give them the answers that they want to hear, because otherwise you're not going to thrive and you're not going to succeed within the system. Now, unless you're a multimillionaire, you can't stick a finger up at the system and live without it. So we've got to jump through these hoops. So what you need to do is do a dual education program. And what I mean by that is that if I had a child, I would say, this is what is expected of you outside of this house. And here are the books that you have at school. However, what we're talking about is actually very real. You won't hear a teacher or a tutor telling you this, but this is very real. And until the human world enlightens itself, I'm afraid this has got to be a subject that we can only talk about amongst ourselves and a few close friends. So you wouldn't be harming him, providing you give him the understanding that to be very open with that knowledge could actually affect the way he is integrated with his other children at school, how the teachers would, and how friends and family would. So in other words, you have to protect your children, but you also have responsibility for teaching them. One of the best ways, actually, is to try to seriously think about whether you want to give inoculations, whether you think that eating meat is a good thing, whether you think that if you're in a fluoridated water area, that's a good thing. So you need to think about the physical body of the child as well as the development spiritually. And each parent, he or she, will have to see how far they can push the system. In other words, in some bloody countries, you can't send your children to a nursery unless they've been fully inoculated. Well, unless you're a millionaire, you are going to need to send your children to some form of care, but they won't allow them in. So this is how the system is trying to force its control of our children. And so a parent has a very difficult tightrope to walk between protecting and defending, but not to the point that the social services come in and try and take the child off you. Because remember, if your child goes to school and says, oh, my daddy talks to aliens, or my mummy talks to aliens, and the teacher then phones the social services, you'll have a social services person coming round saying, you know, why are you filling your child full of this? We need to be aware that the system doesn't like anybody, whether they're children or adults, who can think for themselves. So you have to be very clever and you have to outthink the system. But it's a very important question you've asked. Thank you.
Exactly. Well, it's like living the sort of Harry Potter life, isn't it?
Yes, you know, absolutely. Yeah.
So.
Oh, tea time.
Tea time. So it is. It's time to. Now, a lot of people have been worried about you over the last month, so I'm just going to play a song called I Worry About You. It was the theme tune to a really brilliant TV series, which was called Kingdom Hospital. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
No.
Based on a Stephen King thing. Anyway, okay. It's a great theme tune. Anyway, here's Ivy with Worry About You.
Okay.
Time flies when you're having fun. Welcome back. So, shall we dive straight into it?
Yes, are we live again?
We're back live on the air. Silverwing. Hello, Simon. Sometimes when you speak about the dark side of Illuminati, you say a bunch of crazy people. Why can't these crazy people be just removed from their positions or killed? How do you think? How much time will it take special agents from different countries to remove current negative ruling elite? Okay. That's probably a very complex question, really.
Yes and no. I think the questioner would see it as a very simple question, and can't understand why it hasn't happened. Whereas you're looking at it and you see all the reasons why it couldn't happen. If you are a negative person, then killing is second nature to you and you don't have a problem. If you're a good person, then killing is something you just don't do. However, there are some instances where an individual needs to be taken out because they could destroy the whole planet and all of the human race together. What the off-planet entities that are positive generally do is turn off the technology. So, for instance, if you have a nuclear warhead, they will deactivate it. If it's a computer system that's doing something, they'll scramble that. So rather than kill people, they'll try to limit the capabilities of that individual or that organization through a reduction in its ability to communicate or operate machines. So taking people out like that isn't something that happens. However, the rules are like the Wild West, that the person that draws his gun first, he's the bad guy. Because he's drawn first. So there are a number of individuals who are in positions of responsibility who are waiting for others to draw the guns on them. And then once they have declared themselves, then they will defend themselves. And then some of these bad people will be taken out. A number of people are being found hung or found taking their own life, allegedly.
Yeah, yeah. Shot themselves in the head 9 times in the back of the head with a nail gun. Amazing.
9 times. Yeah. And there's a combination here of individual groups, or not just sort of acting on behalf of a government, but just more to do with a corporation, that don't hold to any rules or laws. You know, if you think about the traditional mafia of Italy, you know, they had a code of conduct and, you know, anything and everything that would protect that code was done. Now, if you're a good person and you believe in the good, then you don't fight fire with fire. So what you do is you're not going to say, please smack me around the face and then I'll, you know, turn the other cheek and you can smack me on the other side. What these people say is you have to be the aggressor. You have to throw the first punch. Then we know who we're coming for. So I can assure you that there are an awful lot of these negative people who will be taken out. I don't mean they'll go to court and face prison. They will be removed, but they will have to cross that line. That is the process that we're just about to start.
So that is the one. And is this known inside as the Great Revealing or something like that? When everybody kind of takes off their mask and like, oh, you know, look where we are, you know.
Yes, but the point is that it works both ways because there are a number of very, very aware good people in very high positions who will reveal themselves as well within corporations, within multinationals. That would be quite a shock. What I'm going to do, JP, is I'm just going to say that today is the, you know about this, today is the 16th and it's October, because I'm aware that a number of people are repackaging our shows, and sort of sticking wrong dates on them. And it's very, very disquieting.
Oh yeah. I'm wondering about this, whether it's actual, disinfo or whether it's just people out for a quick buck, because, they're putting adverts every 5 minutes.
Yeah, so, it is. Apparently I'm quite marketable. Apparently.
Very good. So if you're listening to this and we've been repackaged, if you're listening to five, adverts every 5 minutes, you shouldn't be. Come to Studio 9 Jam or, to Simon Parks' website and go to there and you'll get the right connections and the original videos with the correct dates on them. And as we say, this is the 16th or the 10th, 2016. And this is, we're in the middle of October, Simon. October surprise? Which part is the surprise? Is it the clowns? Is that the surprise?
Okay, I don't understand what you mean.
You've not heard, there's a whole thing going around. There's people dressing up as clowns in America and in UK just to terrorize people.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. It's a very strange thing.
Okay, I haven't, because I've been so taken with the potential of a nuclear war.
Yeah.
But I'm not being derogatory here. There's a combination of the energies on the planet. The good energies is a lot for people to cope with, but there's also a lot of very negative, electronically, artificially produced energies, which are making some people behave in an incredibly irrational way. There are many, many, many good people who feel exhausted, really, really worn out. Think they've been up Mount Everest, and then there are other people who are running around like a clockwork mouse, frenetically, seem to never run out of energy. And what we've got is the population is being bombarded with energies which range from very positive to very good to artificially created stuff. So I'm not aware of the clown business because I've been busy elsewhere, but clowns traditionally have a very negative, never mind what children 5 and 6 years old might think. Clowns traditionally have a very negative energy to them, especially if you understand their history through the Italian culture and the hierarchy of the clown. So that would be a rather concerning development for me.
Yes. Well, they're out on the streets. So basically that's a signal, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Send in the clowns. Anyway, meanwhile, let's go back to the questions, because this is you're going to love this one. I mean, really, I'm not kidding. It's not.
I love all of them, to be honest.
Yeah. But this is really good. This is from Anne. Dear Simon, I first want to thank you profusely for explaining how to escape the grid when we leave the body. My 88-year-old mother started following your advice the day she listened to your radio show. Good. Every night she would say as she closed her eyes, "I want to go to God." She remembered this when she died, and I have confirmation from 4 different people who are psychic that she did escape the grid and reach her home with no problem whatsoever. She and I wish to thank you so much, and also let your listeners know that your advice works. My question is, when genetic manipulation or experimentation is used, as in Dulcie, do the created beings have souls, and do the genetic creators have any rights to the bodies or the souls that inhabit the bodies they created?
Interesting. Right. Let me just deal with the first bit, and I'm going to have to ask you to give me the second question.
Sure. I'll hold it back for you. Yeah, go.
Very quickly. Right. I suppose if I was arrogant and pushy, I'd say, well, of course my advice works. But what I'm going to say is I'm really pleased that somebody listened to me, did their own thinking, asked their higher self, and felt that it was the right way to go, and practiced that mantra, because that's what it is. And through channeling or through the spirit, this person and others have actually got that confirmation back. If you really want something and you really put the time and effort in, nobody has the right to stop you. If you wish to leave the planet, you've got some psychic abilities, you have to. There are holes now appearing in the grid, and you can do what this lady did. So I'm really delighted, because she has found her peace. You know, for those of us who don't want to keep being recycled back here, it's terribly boring. And some people get to the point where they just want to end their life because they can't stand it and they don't know how to get out of the treadmill. So I always did this because I wanted, for those people who'd had enough of it or their contract was finished and they wanted to go and do something else, this was your ticket out of here. And you're never going to get this from Hollywood or the elite, because they want people recycled. And I came out with it, and others have said this, but for some reason when others were giving this information, it just didn't have that energy boost to break into the human psyche. What I've always tried to do is to break into the human psyche and say, this is a freedom. This is how we do it. Share it, develop it, experiment with it. And let my message go out there. So I'm absolutely delighted. I'm delighted for that individual. I'm delighted for the family, because we are in human bodies and we do have emotions. And if we know that someone we've really loved is actually damn sight happier where they are than where we are, then we can be pleased. Right. Let's have this second question then, because it was quite complicated, JP.
Yes. It's basically, Mike, when genetic manipulation is used, as in Dulcie, do created beings, I mentioned chimeras and things, do the created beings have souls, and do the genetic creators therefore have any rights to the bodies or to the souls that inhabit the bodies they created?
Right. Okay. Got let's it? Stop that. Yeah.
Sorry, stop there. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. Who owns souls and bodies and stuff?
Right. Nobody. When an artificial body is created, the way it is on this planet is that a corporation will have a value of that physical body, and that corporation will own that body. Now that's totally abhorrent, but that's how it is on this planet, because everything is reduced to what its value is. So, but the question is asking a bit more than that. It's asking if the people who create it have a right to that body. And if we think about Adam and Eve, the final reptilian group that created the version of humanity now referred to the humans as the first humans, and tried to set themselves up in a position where they were seen as the gods or the creators. Now that means that they didn't have any rights, and they were trying to get the people to accept them in that role, because if you as a human accept something, you create it through your own reality, you make it happen. The very fact that they didn't, the very fact they had to do that shows me that they don't. So if an individual, a corporation, creates cloned bodies, on the human corporate structure they own it, but from source's point of view, from the point of view of creation, they don't. Now what they do is they have to put souls in these bodies, because it's very hard to animate a clone without some form of living soul. A physical body will not move unless it contains this other part of the deal, which is an energy soul. Now you can have what we would call a blank soul, and many different organizations have different terms for this. The organization I'm familiar with would refer to this as a blank soul. This is a soul that's robotic in the sense that it is arm's length. It doesn't belong to any individual. It hasn't come from an individual as such. It's just been created. It's totally artificial. But you can also put real souls from other people into those bodies, so that that individual has the consciousness of the personality they were previously, although they have been a different body. Hillary Clinton is the main point of fact here. We've got a situation now where it looks as if the brain damage to Hillary Clinton is so great that the mapping of her brain waves to a clone would not be successful. In other words, it's now not possible to have a working clone with Hillary Clinton's soul in it, because it's a bit like taking a CD disc or a DVD and then getting a nail and scratching on it. And when you try and play it, you can play maybe three quarters of it, but the remaining quarter, they keep skipping. And that's the situation with Hillary Clinton, because they can't now transfer to a clone. So what they're having to do is to use Hillary Clinton physical bodies with a remote type of soul, which can only operate for an hour or so. So I hope that answers your question. I could speak a lot longer, but you know what? We're already 20 minutes into the second hour.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of questions about souls and stuff like that, removing bodies. So in general, this is a question from Eve. This is another question. Dear Simon, regarding technology to remove a soul from one body and place it into another, has happened to you, to Al Bielek and Duncan Cameron, to Stuart Sverdlov and others. How is this done? Is it electromagnetic? And right. What about those souls that don't agree?
Very, very good point. A soul that doesn't agree can still be made to do it against its will. So that's the first thing to say. I have a partial memory. I'll just describe what I can remember of soul transfer. I've seen drawings that people have done of where they've actually seen other people's souls transferred. That's not what I remember, but that doesn't mean we're wrong, because each different race will use a slightly different form of technology. Right. I entered a walking. I entered a corridor. The door opens. You go through. It's a bit like an airlock, but it's not. It's to stop the soul escaping. You have to have a trap, two doors like an airlock, because if the soul was to get out of the room, I know this sounds crazy, but if the soul was to get out of the room, then it can't, you know, go back to source or what have you.
It's
so you
like a beagle. It'll escape and run.
Yeah, you have to have a double door. Not because it's running away from what's happening, but when you take a soul from the body, the soul must have a body. So if you do it and you don't have a suitable body close by, the soul will revert to default, which is to go back to source and go and find another body. Right, you have this double door system. You go in. Well, this is the mantid technology. I know the greys have a different system. And then a long corridor. And I don't remember going down the corridor. I remember being in like a cubicle. And then on the ceiling, a device like a disc moving along and the soul hanging from it. And the best way to describe it was if you took a magnet and you held a magnet up and then you put a paper clip and you know, when you put an end of the paper, then the paper clip will just hang on to the magnet and it'll wobble a bit. That's exactly the best way to describe it. So this
the
thing,
the soul magnet, the soul hook.
Absolutely. Moving along the ceiling with the soul there. And then the doors have to open and close so that it's with you. It's got nowhere else to go, so it will go into that body. So I don't know about electromagnetic. I wouldn't have thought that was electromagnetic is used to stun the soul. So it's possible that you would stun the soul before you bring it out. But most people are in agreement, and it's an agreement to do it. So it's not resisting. But in the cases where a soul doesn't agree, then I know there's a lot of pain involved. You know, there is a lot of pain. Because I agreed there was no pain, that is a different process than the greys use. The greys tend to use a tank, and it's a bit more basic, actually, than they'll just sort of have another body by it, and the soul was sort of shocked out of the body, and then it just goes into the next one. And whereas the mantid one is much more of a surgical type process. So I hope that answers the question.
So it sounds like the Grey's version is a little more brutal. And the mantids can do it more gently, is that right?
It's more primitive, simply because the Greys generally, not exclusively, generally don't understand emotions. The mantids don't have emotions, but have made a study of it and understand that the subjects have feelings, and therefore the mantids have tried to accommodate that and I'll give you an example of the reptilians where I talked about 6 years ago, my very first big experience with the reptilians, where they had been taught to smile for me, to try to put me at my ease.
Oh, how cute.
So they have no concept of smiling, but in order to try and come across as something friendly, they've been taught to smile. Now, this is quite interesting because I went public with this 6 years ago, and did a conference which was filmed and went on YouTube, and I talked about how after a few seconds, these grins that these reptilians had just got bigger and bigger, and you could see all their teeth, and it was far from quite friendly or cute, as you say. It was very disturbing. Now, then what happens is Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I've talked time and time again how he has starred in films which have given us information. Arnold Schwarzenegger did the last one, I think, of the Terminator series called Genesis. And what happens is he starts grinning, and the star of the show or the other star of the show say, oh, that's very disturbing. Now, I'm not saying that they watched me 6 years ago and put that in there. But what I am saying is that it's in the elite know that reptilians attempt to smile when they're working with people to try to put them at their ease. And so what we have is, if you haven't seen Terminator Genesis, do please watch it, because you will see Arnold Schwarzenegger as a robot trying to smile, and the human saying, that is disturbing. And that is exactly what I said 6 years ago, which is on YouTube. I don't know which one it is, but some bright spark will be able to go and find that. So some off-planet entities attempt to understand us as humans. Some don't even care. And that's why, you know, so many people who have interaction with greys, they say that what really upsets them is that the grey never talks to them. It doesn't engage with them. It just does things. And it seems so unhuman. And I actually spoke, when I say spoke, I don't mean with my mouth. I spoke, communicated with a grey some time ago and asked why that was. And there was quite shock. And the reason, in most cases, that greys do not communicate with their subjects is because they don't expect the human to remember. And they say, well, what's the point in talking to the person? Because when they, you know, when we put them back, they're not going to remember any of it. And I said, do you know that many of them are remembering it? And that's absolutely confounded them. So the main reason the greys don't communicate when they're doing the surgical operations is because they do not expect the individual to have any recollection. So, you know, walking along with a mantid, just like a grey or a reptilian, will communicate through its mind to me. But a mantid will use its arms as a gesture, because it has learnt that humans, when they speak, they use their hands to reinforce what they're saying. So, but a grey won't do that. A reptilian will if it's aggressive, but a mantid will be more Italian in the sense that it will use its arms in a very flexing way and use its arms to bring a physical expression to what it's saying to you with its mind. Now that means that they've gone to the trouble to understand humans, whereas many other species don't give a fig.
That might be so, quite elegant looking, I imagine. Or scary. I don't know.
No, it is quite elegant. If they're walking down the corridor and, I mean, the thing is, look, when you have communication with somebody from your mind, you have to do two things. If you have five people in a room and you want them all to hear, then you send your communication out as a wide burst. If you only want to talk to one person, and this is what many don't understand, you can actually do that. You can actually take a needle, like a needle ray, a needle thought, which will just go to that one individual and the others won't pick it up. If you have a very close connection with somebody, you can have a private conversation with them, which others can't hack into without being very ham-handed and difficult. But what the mantids that I'm familiar with, when they communicate with you, they'll look at you. Now, they don't need to. if you think about it, if you're psychically communicating, you could turn your back on somebody and still send them a message. But because the mantids understand humans, they will look at them. Number of greys don't necessarily look at people. Some do, some don't. The reptilians tend to look at people because they're trying to intimidate them. So, you know, people who write books and go online and don't really perhaps have the full knowledge that others have, actually understand the nuances of what goes on in society or the connection that exists between different creatures and the human race. So I hope that's helpful anyway.
Well, that is. I mean, see, we're all going to become more and more telepathic, and we're going to need to have a little bit of coaching on, like, what the hell is going on? And how do I focus this? You know, how do we get hold of the control panel in our minds that allows us, or is it in our hearts, that allows us to do this, like narrow brain, you know, all that stuff?
This is a really important point. Because if a three-year-old child became telepathic, that child would not have the social skills physically. Whereas if a 50-year-old person suddenly became telepathic, they would still use their hands, they would still use their expressions on their face, they would still conduct themselves, but a three-year-old who became like that wouldn't necessarily do that. So what we will have is a number of children increasing who will have this telepathic ability, but will have less connection with humanity in the physical. So, you know, it does have to be, not managed, that's not the right word, but, you know, it does have to be guided, because otherwise you're going to have different standards of interacting with people, and it's going to be quite off-putting. So you're absolutely right. We have to be free physically in many ways before we can be free psychically. Some people think the psychic release comes and that forces the physical release, but actually, if you think about slaves in Africa or America, you had to strike the chains off them so they could run. And in many ways, what the human race needs is the chains struck off them so they can be free. And that's what we're fighting for, isn't it? Strike the chains off.
So, talking of chains, Bella has a question. I was just thinking this sequentially, you know, it's like, just one from another. Dear Simon, regarding beings from Sirius A, why did they come here and why did they give dangerous technology to Earth humans? Montauk staff said these beings gave them wrong time travel coordinates, which resulted in the death of many thousands of children experimentees. Is this true? And if so, why did the Sirius A beings do this? What is their agenda?
Good question. Somebody's done their research. Well done. Let's just start with a number. Let's start with number one. And we'll have a number 12. And let's say that we live on number 6. So we're midway, so between, you know, the 1 and the 12. We're about midway. If we have time travel technology, we may not be able to go direct from 6 to 12, but we may have to go from 6 to 7. And then 7 to 8. Each time we reappear, we put a tear or a rip or a distortion into the time field. And it's a bit like digging holes in grounds. If you dig enough holes in the ground, the whole ground will collapse because its integrity has been destroyed. This was a deliberate attempt to trap the humans in time travel technology, because if you go forward, you do have to surface at certain points. Each time you do, you create a hole, which means that it's incredibly dangerous for redoing it or coming back again. So this was a deliberate trick to entrap humanity in a way that allowed others to come back into those holes. So for instance, if I'm number 52 and you've been playing around with time and you put a hole in at number 22, I might not be able to come all the way from my big figure right down to 3 or 4, but because you've put a hole in at number 22, that's midway between you and me, and I might then be able to come through there. So The questioner is absolutely right. This was deliberate technology, and the humans who were dealing with it were greedy and desperate for technology and gave it a go. And if you think about in the war years when the Philadelphia experiment took place, that was part of this. Every time that ship emerged, it created a rift in time. Fascinating question. Well done. You've done your research. You're absolutely spot on.
Oh, we should do a time travel show. When do you want to do it? Any Sunday, even today. no, you've got stuff to do. But, you know, the whole time travel and rips in whole. You see, there's a common thread here. The reptilians brought in the Archons through their infected computers. We see this on, you know, people bring their laptops into your network and, you know, you get a virus off their laptops. All of this, it's essentially, we're laying ourselves open. Now we're messing about with time. There's another kind of, infection or parasite that is coming through and causing us contagion.
That's the problem, is that the world that we inhabit is very, very appealing to many other life forms or pseudo life forms. They want what we have, but they're not prepared to sit around the table and share or discuss it. And they just want to take, and that's, of course, not acceptable.
So let's move on. Andreas. Hi, Simon. In my reading, you said my soul is Pleiadian and also that I have quite a lot of reptilian. These races are incompatible, so how could this happen? Much love, Andreas. Yeah, this is the big question, isn't it? This is the whole battle, isn't it?
This actually is a very positive story. If we as a people, and I mean everything that lives that's good, or has a potential to be good, in order to try to understand your enemy, I'm going to use that word, you have to live next to them. You have to be with them. And so there are good reptilians, and there are those who wish to change. And so when a person contains what would appear to be two diametrically opposing sides, so I can't think of anything more diametrically opposing than a Palladian and a reptilian, what a fantastic opportunity to learn. And that is exactly what's going on. It's so that both sides can understand the other and see if there is any common ground on which to work. So if you are continually battling within yourself, one part of you is reptilian, one part's Palladian. That energy information is being transferred in real time to a range of others who are then hopefully choosing to learn from your experiences. It also allows you in a physical form to bring a range of compromise in a physical manifested environment. So it's actually one of the greatest challenges for anyone. You might be a person with a partner. You might be, let's say you are Palladian and you've got a partner who is reptilian. And you think, well, you know, what the hell am I with this person? You know, we don't get on, etc. But then you do get on other ways. And, you know, there is a test going on. It's a massive experiment in many countries, which ultimately source is very interested in, to see if the things that it has created individually can actually work it out as part of a wider family. Because it's the only way forward. You know, we can't go on fighting, we can't go on arguing, we have to actually sit around the table and do it. And the best way to do that is, if you think of your body, your physical body as a factory, like a paint factory, and you're trying to balance like a bit more blue or a little bit more yellow, or this is a bit too red, let's put some more of this color in. And what we're trying to do is to balance the needs or the intent of one strong energy field with another. And if an individual can come to peace with themselves or have a relationship with somebody who's very different from them, but make it work, that is the blueprint which can then be recopied, because if that individual made it work, then others can make it work. So that is why the questioner has a mixture of Palladian and Reptilian, because those two elements wanted to be together. That's the key here. They both agreed to work together in one physical body, because otherwise you wouldn't do it. Why would you be in, if you think of the body as a container, it could be looked on as a prison. You know, why would you put two desperately different elements into a prison, you know, bumping into each other every 2 minutes? Because they both agreed, they both wanted to work it out. They obviously are enlightened, both those elements. They'd realize that this can't go on any longer, and wonderful that they should do it. So that's what that's all about.
Excellent. Because that's where we're going. Yeah, having a reptilian girlfriend. Yeah, tell me. Anyway, meanwhile, okay. Right, okay, so this is from Parvati. Simon, I hope you can answer this question. Several people have said that US military has technology from Project Bluebeam that allows them to project a 3D hologram that can be seen and photographed. And this technology was used on 9/11. At least one witness on the ground said he was looking and saw no planes. Detailed analysis show that we were shown fake footage as from a video game. On the other hand, some people have claimed that two black boxes were found and they worked on one of them. Can you tell us whether any physical planes struck the Twin Towers on 9/11?
Right. There is a very good bit of footage on YouTube which shows one of the airplanes and its nose popping out the other side of the building. And on British television some 5 or 6 years or 7 years after 9/11, there was some, we call it in Britain a skit where you have fun, and it showed an aeroplane crashing into the House of Parliament. In fact, we call it Big Ben. It's all part of the House of Parliament for our American listeners. But in this little joke that was done, this aeroplane crashed into Big Ben and hey ho, its nose popped out the other end. And that's a very, very, clever, under the carpet jibe that much of what we saw was, just literally done on a computer. What the questioner hasn't added, and I will add, is that Project Bluebeam can also produce sound. I've talked about, you know, when, the situation with Cuba was very bad, they were going to use Project Bluebeam to show, you know, the Virgin Mary to the people in Cuba, because they're very, very strong Catholics. Virgin Mary was going to tell them to rise up and throw Fidel Castro off. And the destroyer, I think it was a destroyer or a frigate, with the device on board, was actually on its way to Cuba. And then President Kennedy got in and said no and called it back. So that was back in the early 60s. I can assure you that their technology existed 15 years ago to project a person who could walk into a room and have a conversation with you. And that person would appear to be real from a distance. That's the technology they have available, and you can have sound with it. So absolutely, any false flag alien invasion will use two or three real physical first generation triangle spacecraft, and then a whole group of Project Bluebeam projections. Yeah, so good question, thank you.
Yes, many secret technologies, or patented, they weren't secret, they were patented, but you really have to look hard for them. We know that a certain Hillary was a patent lawyer at the time. Anyway, long story, short ending. Simon, can you please, this is from Cosma. Simon, can you please tell us about the Raptor race that has a relationship with the US Navy? And do they have an empress who is in charge Yeah, well, loads of questions. Are they androgynous? And are they at war with the Dracos? And why? And what's their agenda? So let's sum them all up. Could you talk about the Empress of the potential androgynous raptors? And are they enemies of the Draco reptilians?
Right. I can't unfortunately ask the person, but they obviously have a very strong interest in that particular race. And I feel the energy of the question, and I'm wondering whether they are in communication with one of these beings. Right. The US Navy, of all of the armed services of the United States of America, was always and is always the one that was least corruptible. If you watch Star Trek, then they have a referral to the spaceships almost like ships on the ocean. And that's a natural progression of a ship on an ocean going into space. The US Navy did not want to do what the Army and the Air Force had done, and what the Pentagon wanted them to do. They wanted to make their own connections. Now, when people graduate from military academy, they'll know whether they have high psychic ability. And these individuals will find themselves moved into special groups or special programs where they interact with off-planet entities. The raptor race actually is one of the races that uses swords, like a scimitar, a sort of a curved Turkish blade. The raptors use that. The raptors do not like the reptilians, that's quite right. And the raptors have an agreement with the United States Navy simply because raptors are quite, I don't mean it rudely, they're self-centered. The raptors aren't out for world domination, and they rather like the fact that the United States Navy is a self-contained entity within itself, I mean a corporate entity, and doesn't deal with many other outside races or influences. So the raptors have a one-to-one association with the Navy and don't mix and match, so you don't get raptors popping over to the Air Force or anywhere else. Now, they're asking about the ruling, the hierarchy of them. The warrior clan, there's very strong male energy, but the feminine line was originally sort of through a royal line, a ruling royal line, which weakened over time, and it became more balanced. So you've got the male and the female now much more balanced. I couldn't call emperor and empress, because what's happened with the raptor race is they've fragmented. So you've got groups or colonies in particular planets who are totally standalone. So you can't imagine an empire where you've got 50 planets and everybody of that particular raptor race is, you know, all up the chain of command. That is not what's happened with the raptors. They are individual groupings who have created their own type of leadership. Just like the old Chinese or Scottish clans, in times of great stress, they would all come back and support the top individual. But generally speaking, you'll find a group of raptors make an agreement, not with a planet, not with a country, but with a particular aspect that appeals to them. And the fact that the Navy goes out in the sea, it explores, it faces challenges like that, that rather appeals to the raptors. Also, the raptors have very sharp teeth, and they will rip their opponents, if they can, literally limb from limb. So I'm sorry that was quite a long answer, but that was a very good question.
So, wow. There's more to heaven and earth than is dreamt of in your philosophy. News to some people, the raptor's existence. Thank you. Okay. From Empress to Goddess. Susan Broderick. Thank you for the invaluable support you give all light workers. Without it, our hope and faith would certainly waver in these chaotic times. Question. If the goddess is the creator secretly worshipped by those who promote such symbols worldwide, i.e. the Jesuits, why are women globally dishonored, disrespected and treated so cruelly and harshly? Good question.
Because what evil people wish to do is to control the physical body. When you are evil, you wish to turn everything your way. So I look on that as corruption. So if you take something which is pure, which is divine feminine, should be pure, if you're evil, that's anathema to you. So what you want to do is corrupt it. But because it's divine, it has a connection that the males don't have, and that's very powerful. And so by trying to harness that energy, negative people are attempting to boost their own magic or their own control by usurping or hacking into that connection. That's why, and I've, you know, said on a number of occasions, in Great Britain you have a woman prime minister. In America you supposedly have a woman who's going to be the president. You've got in Germany a woman who's the chancellor. And if you are manipulating these women, you're doing so because you are trying to alter or influence things on the planet through their feminine divine energy. The church fears women, and that's why witches or very knowledgeable healers were persecuted, because women generally cannot be manipulated on the energy level as a man can. So women offer more of a resistance to evil doings than men. And so if you were a large multinational and you were under control of a satanic force, you would wish to, through your Hollywood or your studios, you would wish to corrupt women because you can use that energy. So that's what it's all about. It's about controlling the physical body and using that energy for nefarious purposes. So the Jesuits will say one thing and do something completely different. So that's your answer.
As they do all the time. Thank you. Now, this is a dream. In a dream, some humans were tested by aliens. The humans were to discover and perform some task, but all they did was scream in fear. My thoughts were, you're doing it wrong. I could do this. I received the thought, wanna try? I'm thinking, wait, you mean now? At this point, I was in my typical paralyzed half-awake state. I could sense a completely invisible orb closing in on my nose from below, which I could accept or block out. I felt rushed to make a decision now as it kept closing in, and I eventually accepted it inside my head. I thought I'd teleport somewhere now because I felt my soul diving, but instead I dove into complete control of my body. Did I make some agreement, or did I cause this experience alone? Any ideas?
Right. When a person begins to wake up, and I mean spiritually or more importantly psychically, if that person wishes for something to happen, then they may be given the opportunity to test. Generally speaking, the vast majority of people fail simply because the programming on this planet kicks in and they're not at soul level able to overwrite the programming that's organic. In other words, I see a ghost, I see a demon, I scream, I hide. How many children cover their heads with the bedclothes at night time because they're scared? You know, how many children, how many of us have taken a torch under the blankets with us? So at that age range, you are already programmed. So one of the ways to test is to, what they call it, partially freeze an individual, so that you can't move. Of course, the medical profession just say that's when you're between one phase of sleep or another. I don't believe that at all. If you are off-planet entity and you think there's a potential with a human, what you will do is you will paralyze that human through the mind, doesn't adversely affect them, so that they can't scream, panic or run away. And then you will give them an image and you will measure the reaction to that image. When Charles Hall, who was a weather forecaster at Area 51, he was chosen for the job simply because he had a very calm personality. Previous weather forecasters had been subject to interaction and had just had nervous breakdowns. So if you're testing a person, you don't want to give them a full-blooded view of a 15-foot reptilian because they might have a meltdown. So what you'll do is you will test them with an orb, or you will test them in some way which opens a communication. The individual who's written in may not remember, but there will have been a two-way form of communication, and then an experience would have come from that. And depending on that individual's response would declare whether there would be a further experience, much more real. Number of people who see off-planet aliens don't see the real face. They either don't see a face, or the person, the alien, appears to them as, an old lady or a wizard or something like that. And that's because they've adjudged that individual isn't yet at the stage of their development to be able to cope with that. And I've always said that if you take a 2-month-old baby and you put it on an airplane, and every week you fly that baby on an airplane from one airport to another, and you increase the distance over time, by the time that child's 5 or 6 years old, it'll happily go from JFK to Heathrow Airport, providing nothing bad happens. And in my case, the entities that I saw were their real face from a very early age. So by the time I was about 5 or 6, I knew no different and I accepted it. But had I had a disposition that would have been very nervous or, fearful or, hyperactive, then I probably would have reacted very differently, because I am quite a calm person, when faced with something, like that, then the reaction that I have has meant that they've come back and come back and come back. If you go to pieces or you freeze, scream and shout, well, they won't come back unless they're trying to hurt you. So it's very, very complex. And I would suggest that in your case, that you were being tested to see, firstly, whether you accepted it, whether you understood it. And once you did and you were out of your body, just how far could you go with it? So that's my take on it.
And that little bell rings the bell that says it's the time of the hour. Thank you so much, Simon. I wish I could have. I mean, I do have a spare slot, and I know it would be rude to ask if you could do it, but I have to ask. Do you have any time later?
No,
okay. Don't worry.
When I give myself to this, I really give everything. It's not like running up a hill, but
I know it takes it out of you. Yeah.
Really good. So, I'm gonna have a rest. Listen, I love everybody. Everyone who's been so kind and supported me in whatever way. It's really sort of reminds me why I and others do what we do. Because, it's worth fighting for, isn't it? So, listen, God bless, and thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Simon. God bless you.
Yes. Bye.
Connecting consciousness.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.